Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy, and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats, and also studio chats, with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is honored to be presented again this year by Townsend Automotive in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Celebrating 50 years of service in Tuscaloosa and West Alabama, the Townsend family of dealerships has been a locally owned company built on service and connection with its customers. At Townsend Honda, with new cars in short supply, they've purchased more than 200 quality pre-owned vehicles. And every one of them goes through a 118-point inspection before it's offered for sale to you. Most of those vehicles are either Honda-certified pre-owned or Townsend-certified pre-owned, and the dealership also has a fully staffed parts and service department to assist you beyond the purchase day throughout the life of your vehicle. That includes Saturday service, which is available until 1 p.m., even during football season. Visit TownsendHonda.com for current inventory, or if you're in West Alabama, stop in. Townsend Honda salutes local entrepreneurs, from restaurateurs to podcasters, and they welcome you to be part of a community that does the same. Vaucroissant sausage has been a true flavor of New Orleans since 1899. Vaucroissant Sausage Company is a third-generation, family-owned business in the 7th Ward of the city, and its current caretakers are Vance Vaucroissant and his wife, Julie. They're well-known members of the community, but especially visible each year during Jazz Fest, when patrons queue up for their famous fresh sausage po' boys. Vance is not only keeper of the family recipes, but a steward and ambassador of New Orleans culture as well, and that includes being a jazz singer. Music, food, and community are forever entwined in this city, and the spicy bite of his distinct sausages shows up on restaurant menus, in home kitchens, and at the just-opened Vaucroissant's Creole Cafe and Deli. It's the next chapter in this family legacy, and just like a good jazz riff, it's all about keeping the notes flowing and making it work through improvisation and perseverance. Welcome to the Southern Fork.
Well, thank you. I've heard so much, read much more, and have been looking forward to this wonderful sit down.
Oh, well, I feel the same way about you. So I'm very, very excited to sit down with you and chat today. We are sitting, what is the neighborhood that we're in right now?
We are in the historic 7th Ward neighborhood of New Orleans. We are on the corner of St. Bernard Avenue and North Roman Street. Okay. It is in the epicenter of the 7th Ward, a very busy exchange. And my family has existed within this two-block stretch of this St. Bernard Avenue for over 122 years.
Wow. Wow. And you can trace that. That's so cool.
Yes.
So I found out about you through Simone and the idea of the Jazz Festival and the idea that you were in diapers when your parents had the first food vendor stall.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. You know, the Jazz and Heritage Festival, the idea was conceived by George Wein, He was a personal friend of Larry Borenstein. Larry Borenstein was my dad's business partner at the Vocations Cafe Creole, which was born in the early 60s at 624 Bourbon in New Orleans on Bourbon Street. And they got together, Larry and my dad, and said, look, we need an authentic Creole restaurant that's actually not only cooked, but also owned by a member of the Creole community. We opened this restaurant, and Larry's good friend George Ween came in one day and was talking to us about his festival, the Newport News Jazz Festival, which predates the New Orleans Head Jazz and Heritage Festival.
It's a great jazz festival.
Oh, it is.
And I am a jazz fan. But anyway, go ahead.
So you're a big jazz fan.
Yes, I am.
Okay. George Ween came in one day and was telling my dad and Larry about his Newport News Jazz Festival. And at this meeting also was a young manager of Preservation Hall, Alan Jaffe, who was a tuba player that moved here from Michigan.
Right.
And was managing the club for Larry. And basically, these men engaged George in conversations about, well, how come New Orleans does not have a jazz festival? We're the birthplace, you know? And so, like any other group of friends, brainstorming and talking about ideas, my dad told me that George left that conversation. And shortly after that, engaged two people, Allison Miner and Quint Davis. And they started to help him to forge the way. And then the very first festival was born, and they approached my dad and said, look, would you be a vendor at the first festival? So what we did was we had the restaurant on Bourbon Street. We made the po' boys at the restaurant, wrapped them in foil, brought them out to the booth, and my mom was there with me, a little baby on the side. She was watching me. And somebody come up, and she'd hand them the foil-wrapped sausage po' boy. And we've been giving out po' boys at the last 53 festivals ever since. We're the only original food vendor left. The people ask us, why do you subject yourself to this 7 days of tough vending? When you grow up with something, you just figure it's just a way of life.
Yeah.
So, you know, my wife, when she came in, she's like, when I married you, I married Jazz Fest. And then our kids have been indoctrinated, and different people have come and gone. But I don't know. I don't know what I would do last weekend in April and the first weekend in May if I wasn't on the fairgrounds selling po' boys.
There you go. This has brought up twofold questions. So first, I would love for you to define for Southern Fork listeners. I know it's actually a book, but could you explain the difference of Cajun versus Creole and actually how that Creole culture is really anchored here in New Orleans?
You know, I really love history, and I've always been in search for the real good understanding of our culture, having lived one aspect of it, but then also hearing so many different interpretations. So in my own research and in really delving into it and talking to a lot of different people, we have to understand that one of the biggest questions I get at the festivals or at any time is, what's the difference between Cajun and Creole? And there, one is a subset of the other. All Creole really means is native or indigenous of the colony. This is a French colony, a European colony, before the 13 states acquired us because Haiti fell and France needed money. So anyone who's born in a French or Spanish colony, because where the French spelling of Creole is C-R-E-O-L-E, the Spanish version is C-R-I-O-L-L-E.
Right.
They both mean the same, born of the colony. So all of these wonderful people who have immigrated to this beautiful state via the birth canal, which is the Mississippi River, and have traveled all the way up and over through the state. And we've had so many different people that have come from so many different places. When they have children here, those children are Creole. Now, that's the umbrella. Subsets are all of those nationalities and ethnicities that have contributed to what has made our Creole here in Louisiana so unique and so wonderful in regards to everyone who visits here from all around the world, falls in love with it, finds some commonality, but also want to stay.
Right.
We can't get people to leave.
Yeah, I really, really want to stay right this second. I really do. I was walking this morning taking pictures, and I was like, I could live there. I could also live there. This is the wanderlust in me. Yeah.
It is a magical place. Like, for instance, we have something called pineed meat. Pineed meat is breaded veal, breaded pork, breaded chicken. Well, that's an influence from the Italians.
Yeah, it's like chicken parm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They brought that to us, so we're thankful. And even to this day, when we make pineed meat, we make it with Italian breadcrumbs. Italian flavored breadcrumbs. The Italians were the ones who were our corner stores and our grocers and all that. Mm-hmm. So they helped to bring up so much of their food ways to the Creole culture.
And it's like the muffalata.
Yes.
With the olive salad.
Olive salad. They've left that for us to have.
Yeah,
but
we have to talk sausage.
Yes.
So I know that a lot of Southern Fork listeners are cooks and home cooks. So I really want to delve in. I want to dig in to specifically what your sausage is. So it's a link sausage, right? Mm-hmm. Does it have a natural casing?
Yes, our sausage is traditionally a link sausage. It's a fresh sausage, and it is a natural casing. We use hog casings. We have been making, our sausage has been known here culturally as chorice, C-H-A-U-R-I-C-E. That name sounds familiar because the Spanish have a version that they call chorizo.
Right.
We have different things in each one, but our chorice is made with a lot of wonderful things, paprika, crushed red, cayenne pepper, a little garlic, a little onion. But we mix it in a way where by the time you bite it, you get a little spice on your palate and a little love in your tummy.
Well, and when it goes on a po' boy, what else dresses that?
Well, traditionally in New Orleans, you put some lettuce and tomatoes. And that's when they say, give me my po' boy with its clothes on. Dressed. So we'll put that. You might have some pickles thrown on there as well. Some people like their po' boys breaded, buttered, as nice and buttered and toasted. And so we try to replicate that here at our Cafe Deli. But then we get some people, you know, people like their po' boys the way that they do. And so they'll come in and say, oh, well, I like it plain. So then we say, okay, well, if you don't want it dressed, then you must like it naked. So we give it to them like they like their mate.
Well, there you go. Maybe that needs a little bit of a jazz song right
there.
A
little jazz song. Let's see. There was a boy, a certain strange enchanted boy. They said he traveled very far, very far, over land and sea. That's a little tidbit for you right there.
I love it. I like that song a lot, too. So, food is such an anchor in the South. It's such an anchor in New Orleans culture, and it's such an anchor in your life. But because it's your legacy, yes, of course, it's always been something that you've just known how to do. But it's really difficult. Opening this place is really difficult. You know, we were just talking about, you know, dealing with the city and training staff and opening and closing, and your dad had a place in the 60s, and you can make this easier on yourself is what I'm saying. You're known around the city, so you could probably translate into doing something else. What is it about this business, this food industry kind of world that keeps you coming back?
You know, it's two things that keep people loving New Orleans, food and music. But it's the people. Once you interact with us, once you have a meal with us, once you have a conversation with us, or after all of that, once you actually fall in love with us, then you really see what New Orleans is about. We have all these old buildings. We have all this storied history. But it's the people that have grown up here, that have been a part of this wonderful culture, who embody truly what New Orleans is.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to say, hey, after Katrina took us out and we had to come back, and then we had to decide how we were going to come back, I wanted to come back where I could still see my people, interact with them, feed them, and also talk to them about our culture so that we can hopefully, the younger generations can move forward and understand who they are, their history, their culture, and hopefully pass it down for generations to come.
Now, when you're not cooking, what is one of the things, if you're away from New Orleans, that you just start to have a taste for and you're like, I gotta get back? Not beyond the people, just like your stomach's like, I need to go home.
When I travel, I've been to places, I always try to find that which is culturally significant of the area and learn about it, try it, and understand why that is the cuisine or the food focal point of that area. Find it interesting because when you seek those places out, you find the people that make it, you talk to them, you learn about it, and you come away with a greater understanding so that when you're eating it, it makes sense on your palate.
It does. That's exactly what I feel. Mm-hmm. That's what this work is. It makes sense on my palate after I have a conversation with someone.
Yes. And so.
And I do. I learn and I'm curious.
And that's all we ask is when people, if they really want to know who we are, what we're about, what our culture is, we want you to come with that open mind and ask the questions so that we can hopefully fill your mind up with things that you can then go and research, look up, read on your own, which really gives you almost a microcosmic sense of what the world could be. Because New Orleans is a melting pot. And if we were allowed to exist without all of those interpretations and forces coming in and saying we needed to be this, this, and this, we would be this wonderful melting pot of all these people that knew they were mixed up together, probably half of us related, mixed with this, mixed with that. Like, for instance, I'm mixed with French, Polish, Jewish, Native American, East Indian, Spanish. I mean, if I tried to do the ancestry DNA on the little leaves would stop coming up because they wouldn't know. They're like, we're lost here. We can't give any more hints.
No more hints on ancestry.com. But what is that food? What's that food that says home to you?
You know, New Orleans, there's certain dishes that when you come home, I went away to college in Atlanta. And when I came back, you know, you want to get gumbo. You want to get your mama's gumbo. You want to get those red beans. You know, you want to get a po' boy, shrimp, oyster, seafood especially. Because we do it differently than everywhere else.
This is true.
We do our seafood protein so much different. I give Maine their lobsters. I give the East Coast what they do with their chowders, clams. I give you respect because you take your protein, you know what to do with it. But when you come down here, we're going to show you how to do crawfish, shrimp, oysters, catfish. We're going to take all that and master that. So when you leave here, you're going to leave with a saying that we use in my company. When we tell you when you eat our sausage, it'll make your mouth feel happy and your tummy say yummy.
Oh, I love it. So we have been chatting inside this beautiful, new, refurbished interior building. And, you know, here you are on the edge of something new yet again, right? So what is making you hungry? What's percolating for you? What's on the horizon?
You know, for me, I wanted to place my roots back in my neighborhood after the storm. It took us about 17 years to come back. We were still doing festivals. We were still having our brand out there in food service. But I had to come home to the neighborhood. You know, the neighborhood is highly gentrified. There's a lot of change. It's really not that many even kids walking around. But when we opened up and we saw the amount of people that came from all over the city that just were happy we were back and just wanted to get a taste, not only of our sausage, but of interaction. Mm-hmm. Seeing their people, meeting other people, just finding that commonality that our community had always done. You know, as people said I was a fool for doing this. I'm 53, and they say you're going to open up a new business model of a restaurant, deli, cafe. I just felt like, you know, sometimes you have to serve, and you have to figure out what's the best way to do it. And so
you do it the way you know how,
do it the way
right?
You know how.
That's right. You're never asked to do it the way you don't know.
No.
You're asked to do what you do.
What we do. Right.
Right. Right.
So I just try to do what I feel my ancestors would want me to do in terms of keeping things going. I mean, I've been fortunate. A lot of people have come here and said, your dad would be proud. Your mother would be proud. Your grandfather, you know, and it's nice to hear, you know, I just want them to know that, you know, I picked up the mantle and I just kept going. Because multi-generational businesses always have a challenge. As each generation turns over, it's always, will the next generation take it forward, move it on?
Yeah.
It's not always guaranteed. Everyone right. has their own interests and what they
right.
want to do.
Right, but also the city's generation changes. You have to adapt, but you also have to stay true. And that's a really hard line to walk.
Yes.
Lots of times. So
yes, it is.
I like that.
It is.
So what is one aspect of this job that really fits like a puzzle piece with an aspect of your personality?
Well, I love people. I love to talk. You know, my wife always says, oh, my
I'm
God.
I'm shocking. That's shocking.
No, it's just shocking. I love to talk. I love to talk to people. I love to engage people. And based on what they say and what they may want to know, give them some history, some culture, you know, educate them. Hopefully leave them with an experience of interaction that they may want to come back and seek out other people like myself or come back and talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because hopefully it'll leave them with more. They can go back and listen, learn, read, seek out for themselves. But it's really about the interaction with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and in places like this, it's really more in plain sight. But everywhere, history is alive.
Yes.
It's alive in people.
Yes.
And the past, you know, Faulkner has that saying of the past isn't dead, it's not even past. And in New Orleans, it's right up on the edge of you, right? And so that idea of history is it doesn't have to be a dry, boring textbook. It is a living, breathing testament.
Yes.
Right in front of us, you know, from city planning to civil rights mm-hmm. to personal histories. Mm-hmm. And that is very experiential, especially when it comes to food, because mm-hmm. you can taste history on the plate and also the future at yes. the same time.
Yes.
Which is really
some
cool.
These chefs coming up, these young ones are taking some of our mainstay dishes and giving them, tweaking them, giving them different twists.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have our traditionalists and some of our new people. And there's a little bit for everyone, but it's always good to grow and find something new and incorporate it into what we have today. Our history is important. I know history is kind of under attack. And I think what's wrong is that we have so many young people who they're looking for information and looking to understand who they are, where they're from. And I think we only owe them the ability to give them that education, that oral history about their own families, their ancestors, their environments, the cities that they grew up in, and their familial participation, so they can truly know who they are, hopefully plant roots back where they are, or go out and represent from where they are
mm-hmm.
with pride and tradition.
I can't add anything to that. It's beautiful. What is one thing keeping you up at night? Quick fire.
Well, right now, it's this new business entity. You know, anytime you pivot and you say, oh, I'm going to try something different, and you look at the news and they talk about inflation and a recession, and you see how everything is going up, and you see all the issues with labor, and you see all the issues with getting funds you need, and you wonder, so why do I want to subject myself to this? But, you know, I've been fortunate enough to work with my father through different parts of my life. When I was young, I worked with him as a child, as that free labor that you give to your parents.
Mm-hmm. In the restaurant, right?
Yeah, it's just somewhere, or in the sausage plant, or in the meat market. And then I went away to school, educated, came back, because I wanted to work with my dad. He was a very busy man, and I didn't have much time with him. So I came back to work with him, had 7 wonderful years till he died. And those 7 years I cherished because I learned a lot about him and my relationship with him as a grown man. But there were so many nuances that make me now understand a lot about myself from learning him. Sometimes in the night when I'm up, I wake up about 3 o'clock every morning, not because I want to. It's just my internal clock. And I sit there and I think. I think about the past, the present, and the future. And I think about the past and what it's taught me, the present and what it's putting me through, and the future in terms of where we're going to chart a new course.
I'm a 3 a.m. girl myself. Half the time, though, I'm not being as poetic as that. I'm more like writing emails.
Yeah, jumping on the computers.
That's right, yeah. Mentally. And yeah. Finally, I'm like, you can do that tomorrow. Well, there's something that I reserve just for Southern Fork guests. And really, this is my Southern Fork magic picnic basket. So with this basket, I can time travel. I can go back and ask somebody to make just one more bite of something you love. I can source for you and I can cook a little bit. And I'd love to put some things together in that basket. Not for a formal picnic, just what you're interested in. And I know as a cook and a chef and a lover of food that you are going to have a shifting and changing menu all the time, depending on what you're in the mood for. But I would love to know some things I can put in that basket for you today.
Of what I want to eat?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got to have... You know, there's an oyster dressing that we usually had during Thanksgiving or holidays that my mother made. And I used to crave it when the holidays would come. And the leftovers were just, me and my brothers would fight over it. And then we had a seafood dressing. That's the thing. We had an oyster dressing. And then we had some other dressings, Milliton dressing. And that, and then, you know, just those holiday meals, because... Even though my mother wasn't a great cook, her aunt taught her how to cook a holiday meal.
Mm-hmm.
So from the turkey to the stuffings, the dressings, the gumbo, I look so fondly back at that. If I was going to put that in my basket, I'd want that, because that was some of the few times that our family really came together holistically and were able to sit and eat and share and be thankful. So if I had to put something in the basket, it would be those holiday meals.
Excellent. And if you're a po' boy... And you're in a po' boy mood. Do you go sausage all the time, or do you have an alternate that you like as well?
Well, you know, I'm always going to push the proteins I make. I'm always going to push sausage. But we have other po' boys that I like. I like a good shrimp po' boy and a good oyster po' boy, or half and half. I like a good panade pork chop po' boy or panade chicken po' boy. And really, I don't want my mind to start rolling. There's so many other ones I could throw out there, but... You know, as long as the po' boy is well constructed and have all the elements on it.
So you definitely like them dressed with their clothes on?
I like them half dressed.
Oh.
I like some of your clothes off.
Well, on that note, if people want to learn more, it is New Orleans after all. Mm-hmm. You can go to thesouthernfork.com. I'm going to have links there as well as images so you can see the face behind the voice. And he sings too. And if you like what you hear, there are more than 300 other episodes in the archives. Dive in, dig in, get hungry, get curious, and make some travel plans. You can just jump in the car with a tank of gas and get to a lot of these places. But meanwhile, it's been at least 30 minutes since I've eaten, so I'm probably going to have to go and eat again. But thank you so much for taking time. I know this is a crazy week. I really appreciate you.
Oh, yeah. No, we're thankful. We appreciate you offering us this opportunity to speak to your listeners. And on the way out, I'll leave them with this.
Okay.
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans in the summertime? Just pack up your bags and come on down and see me right back in New Orleans.
Lovely. Hello and welcome to Talking With My Mouthful. I am sitting right now watching the wind whip through some live oak trees full of Spanish moss, and you probably are going to be able to hear some wind chimes in the background. That's because I am watching a very rare late season tropical storm finish blowing through the South Carolina Lowcountry. This was just some rain that South Carolina desperately needed and some wind and not really much else except for some, of course, flooding in downtown Charleston because, well, it floods on high tide lots of times these days. But you heard in this interview that Vance mentioned Katrina, and And it took him 17 years to open the deli and go back to the neighborhood. And when I visited New Orleans, I noticed that there were still so many buildings that were empty, even in the French Quarter. There was a city that was before Katrina and a city that is after Katrina. And a lot of these large weather events, whether it's an earthquake in California or a wildfire, or in a place like Charleston, where I'm sitting right now, there was before Hurricane Hugo, which was 1989, or after. And so if you are familiar with a place like that, it takes a lot of resiliency, and it also takes a lot for the citizens to carry on, to move on, to decide to move back. A lot of New Orleans natives scattered and never went back to the city. But one thing that I was really, really struck with was how much everyone who wanted to talk to me really wanted to talk to me about New Orleans. They are fiercely proud of it and fiercely protective of it. It's just an amazing city, and I'm looking forward to sharing some more stories from it beyond this week. Until next time. Thanks so much for listening, and I will be right here.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?